Chapter 6. It was late afternoon when Franny went out back to where her father was patiently weeding the peas and beans. She had been a late child, and he was in his 60s now, his white hair coming out from under the baseball cap he always wore. Her mother was in Portland, shopping for white gloves. Fran's best childhood friend, Amy Lauder, was getting married early next month. She looked down at her dad's back for a peaceful moment, just loving him. At this time of day, the light took on a special quality that she loved, a timeless quality that belonged only to that most fleeting main genus, early summer. She could think of that particular tone of light in the middle of January, and it would make her heart ache fiercely. The light of an early summer afternoon as it slipped toward dark had so many good things wrapped up in it. Baseball at the Little League Park, where Fred had always played third and batted cleanup. Watermelon, first corn, iced tea and chilled glasses. Childhood. Franny cleared her throat a little. Need a hand? He turned and grinned. Caught me digging, didn't you? I guess I did. Is your mother back yet? He frowned vaguely, and then his face cleared. No, that's right. She just went, didn't she? Sure, pitch a hand if you want to. Just don't forget to wash up afterward. A lady's hands proclaim her habits, Fran mocked lightly, and snorted. Peter tried to look disapproving and did a poor job of it. She got down in the row next to him and began to weed. Sparrows were twittering, and there was a constant hum of traffic on US 1, less than a block from here. It hadn't reached the volume it would in July, when there would be a fatal accident nearly every day between here and Kittery, but it was building. Peter told her about his day, and she responded with the right questions. He was a machinist in a large Sanford auto parts firm, the largest auto parts firm north of Boston. He was 64 and about to start on his last year of work before retirement. A short year at that, because he had 4 weeks' vacation time stockpiled, which he planned to take in September, after the idiots went home. His voice switched from topic to topic, mellow and soothing. Their shadows grew longer, moving up the rows before them. She was lulled by it, as she always had been. She had come here to tell him something, but since earliest childhood, she had often come to tell and stayed to listen. He didn't bore her. So far as she knew, he didn't bore anyone, except possibly her mother. He was a storyteller, and a good one. She became aware that he had stopped talking. He was sitting on a rock at the end of his row, tamping his pipe and looking at her. What's on your mind, Franny? She looked at him dumbly for a moment, not sure how she should proceed. She had come out here to tell him, and now she wasn't sure if she could. The silence hung between them, growing larger, and at last it was a gulf she couldn't stand. She jumped. I'm pregnant, she said simply. He stopped filling his pipe and just looked at her. Pregnant, he said, as if he had never heard the word before. Then he said, Oh, Franny, is it a joke or a game? No, Daddy. Come over here. Obediently, she came up the row and sat next to him. There was a rock wall that divided their land from the town common next door. Beyond the rock wall was a tangled, sweet-smelling hedge that had long ago run wild in the most amiable way. Her head was pounding, and she felt a little sick to her stomach. For sure? He asked her. For sure, she said. And then, there was no artifice in it, not a trace. She simply couldn't help it. She began to cry in great, braying sobs. He held her with one arm for what seemed to be a very long time. When her tears began to taper off, she forced herself to ask the question that troubled her the most. Daddy, do you still like me? What? He looked at her, puzzled. Yes, I still like you fine, Franny. That made her cry again, but this time he let her tend herself while he got his pipe going. Borkum Riff began to ride slowly off on the faint breeze. Are you disappointed? She asked. I don't know. I never had a pregnant daughter before, and I'm not sure just how I should take it. Was it that Jess? She nodded. You told him? She nodded again. What did he say? He said he would marry me or pay for an abortion. Marriage or abortion, Peter Goldsmith said, and drew on his pipe. He's a regular two-gun Sam. She looked down at her hands, splayed on her jeans. There was dirt in the small creases of the knuckles and dirt under the nails. A lady's hands proclaim her habits. The mental mother spoke up. A pregnant daughter. I'll have to resign my membership in the church. A lady's hands. Her father said, I don't want to get any more personal than I have to, but wasn't he or you being careful? I had birth control pills, she said. They didn't work. Then I can't put any blame unless it's on both of you, he said, looking at her closely. And I can't do that, Franny. I can't lay blame. 64 has a way of forgetting what 21 was like. So we won't talk about blame. She felt a great relief come over her, and it was a little like swooning. Your mother will have plenty to say about blame, he said, and I won't stop her, but I won't be with her. Do you understand that? She nodded. Her father never tried to oppose her mother anymore, not out loud. She had a sharp tongue, and when she was opposed, it sometimes got out of control, he had told Franny once. And when it was out of control, she just might take a notion to cut anyone with it and think of sorry too late to do the wounded much good. Franny had an idea that her father might have faced a choice many years ago. Continued opposition resulting in divorce or surrender. He had chosen surrender, but on his own terms. She asked quietly, Are you sure you can stay out of this one, Daddy? You asking me to take you apart, Fran? I don't know. What are you going to do about it? With Mom? No, with you, Franny. I don't know. Marry him? Two can live as cheap as one, that's what they say anyway. I don't think I can do that. I think I've fallen out of love with him if I ever was in. The baby? His pipe was drawing well now, and the smoke was sweet on the summer air. Shadows were gathering in the garden's hollows, and the crickets were beginning to hum. No, the baby isn't the reason why. It was happening anyway. Jesse is... She trailed off, trying to put her finger on what was wrong with Jesse, the thing that could be overlooked by the rush the baby was putting on her, the thing that could be buried now but would nonetheless rest unquiet for 6 months, 16 months, or 26, only to rise finally from its grave and attack them both. Marry in haste, repent in leisure. One of her mother's favorite sayings. He's weak, she said. I can't explain better than that. You don't really trust him to do right by you, do you, Franny? No, she said, thinking that her father had just gotten closer to the root of it than she had. She didn't trust Jesse, who came from money and wore blue chambray work shirts. Don't let your mother change your mind, then. She closed her eyes, her relief even greater this time. He had understood by some miracle. What do you think of me getting an abortion? She asked after a while. Listen, he said, and then fell paradoxically silent. But she was listening, and she heard a sparrow, crickets, the far high hum of a plane, someone calling for Jackie to come in now, a power mower, a car with a glass-pack muffler accelerating down US-1. She was just about to ask him if he was all right when he took her hand and spoke. Franny, you've no business having such an old man for a father, but I can't help it. I never married until 1941, just before I went into the war. I was a little older than some of the others that went after Pearl Harbor. Some of them called me Pop. Your mother and I didn't get much of a chance for baby-making before I was shipped away. I got a 2-day pass in October of 1942... and didn't see her again until the war was over. When it was all over, I got my good job over in Sanford, and we settled down. He looked at her thoughtfully in the dusk light. Carla was different in those days. She didn't change until your brother Freddie died. Until then, she was young. She stopped growing after Freddie died. She slapped 3 coats of lacquer and 1 of quick-dry cement on her way of looking at things and called it good. Now she's like a guard in a museum of ideas. And if she sees anyone tampering with the exhibits, she gives them a lot of look out below. But she wasn't always like that. What was she like, Daddy? Why, he looked vaguely out across the garden. She was a lot like you, Franny. She got the giggles. We used to go down to Boston to see the Red Sox play, and during the 7th inning stretch, she'd go out with me to the concession and have a beer. Mama drank beer? Yes, she did. And she'd spent most of the 9th in the ladies and come out cussing me for making her miss the best part of the game. Franny tried to imagine her mother with a cup of Narragansett beer in one hand, looking up at her father and laughing, like a girl on a date. She simply couldn't do it. We tried for a long time to make a baby. Then, in 52, there came your brother, Fred. She just about loved that boy to death, Fran. She had a miscarriage in 55, and we both figured that was the end. Then you came along in 59, a month early, but just fine. And I just about loved you to death. We each had one of our own, but she lost hers. He fell silent, brooding. Fred Goldsmith had died in 1965. He had been 13, Franny 6. The man who hit Fred had been drunk. He had a long list of traffic violations, including speeding, driving so as to endanger, and driving under the influence. Fred had lived 7 days. I think abortion's too clean a name for it, Peter Goldsmith said. I told you I was an old man. You're not old, Daddy, she murmured. I am, he said roughly. I'm an old man trying to give a young daughter advice, and it's like a monkey trying to teach table manners to a bear. A drunk driver took my son's life 15 years ago, and my wife has never been the same since. I've always seen the question of abortion in terms of Fred. I seem to be helpless to see it any other way. Your mother would argue against it for all the standard reasons. Morality, she'd say. A morality that goes back 2,000 years. The right to life. All our Western morality is based on that idea. I've read the philosophers. I range up and down them like a housewife with a dividend check in the Sears and Roebuck store. Your mother sticks with the Reader's Digest, but it's me that ends up arguing from feeling and her from the codes of morality. I just see Fred. He was destroyed inside. There was no chance for him. These right-to-life biddies hold up the pictures of babies drowned in salt, of arms and legs scraped out onto a steel table. So what? The end of a life is never pretty. I just see Fred, lying in that bed for 7 days, everything that was ruined pasted over with bandages. Life is cheap. Abortion makes it cheaper. Not much help, huh? I don't want an abortion, she said quietly. For my own reasons. What are they? It's partly me, she said, lifting her chin slightly. Will you give it up, Franny?
I don't know.
Do you want to?
No. I want to keep it.
He was silent. She thought she felt his disapproval.
You're thinking of school, aren't you? She asked.
No, he said, standing up. He put his hands in the small of his back and grimaced pleasurably as his spine crackled. I was thinking we've talked enough, and that you don't have to make that decision just yet.
Mom's home, she said.
He turned to follow her gaze as the station wagon turned into the drive, the chrome winking in the day's last light. Carla saw them, beeped the horn, and waved cheerily.
I have to tell her, Franny said.
Yes, but give it a day or two, Franny.
All right.
She helped him pick up the gardening tools, and then they walked up toward the station wagon together.